nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello, good evening, and thank you so much for being part of Nationwide. My name is Sunny Martin. We are coming to live from Juba. Today, we shall be having another episode about the transitional justice, and today we are going to be looking at prevention mechanism and institutional reforms in South Sudan. That's what we are going to be discussing today, and we shall be also looking at how to address the root causes of conflict and prevent future violence. And later on, our lines will be open to you where you can call us on 091-206-7879 or 091-206-7929. Those are all our contacts. You can get in touch with us here as I will be having my guest online. Today we discuss the prevention mechanism and institutional reform in South Sudan and how they can help us address the root causes of conflict and prevent future violence. Since the conflict that erupted in December 15, 2013 and also in 2016, many South Sudanese survivors continue to demand accountability and answers about those responsible for those who died during the conflict. Experts say prevention mechanism can help stop future violence, while institutional reforms are key to rebuilding public trust and strengthening accountability. Joining me this evening to discuss all this is Mariana Goetz, who is the Director of Rights for Peace, to discuss how South Sudan can move towards lasting peace and justice. Good evening, Mariana, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and right away, let's begin. Many South Sudanese survivors still want answers about the conflict of 2013 and 2016. Why is truth-telling important in preventing any future violence in South Sudan?
Yeah, that's right. People across the region consistently tell us that they want acknowledgement. They want to know why this happened, and they also want to know that it won't happen again. So truth-telling is important because it builds trust. It creates a foundation of openness, and the sense of acknowledgement really can contribute to healing and a sense of justice, of being heard, that can stay the hand of vengeance. This is often something that we talk about, that if you feel that you have been acknowledged, that there has been some form of justice, then this can stop people taking matters into their own hands because they feel justice has been done.
And from your experience, what are the practical steps South Sudan can take to prevent another maybe outbreak or mass violence in the country?
Well, that's a really big question, and I'm not sure I have all the answers, but I can tell you what has been done in other countries, or at least what the theory is, and then maybe you will tell me if this will be applicable in South Sudan or not. But it's a bit like a fishing net, you know. It takes lots of strings to create the net. And if you have one string that isn't working or is broken, you won't get the result you want. You won't catch your fish. So it's the same thing with prevention mechanisms. You really need a host of mechanisms all kind of working and contributing to each other. And those kinds of mechanisms include things like justice and accountability, security sector reform, like a security sector that protects everybody equally, constitutional rights that are inclusive and that build trust, economic stability, fair resource management, an education system also that teaches social cohesion skills and values, that generates a culture that strengthens inclusion and trust. So those are just some of the mechanisms and institutional reforms that are needed. Yeah, there's not one answer. It's like a whole host of different things that need to work in synergy.
Yes, and in your opinion and from the experience you have, all what you have just outlined, justice, accountability, security sector reform, economic stability, and then education system, who should be at the driving seat to ensure that all those are in place in order to ensure that there is peace and stability given what many people have gone through in this country?
Well, normally there are several entities, you know, the government, but also with international partners sometimes for support. The UN in other contexts has been incredibly important for instance, supporting security sector reform and things like DDR programs, demobilization, disarmament and reintegration programs that have happened, for instance, in DRC or in Sierra Leone or in other countries. There have been important partnerships between the government and other international actors.
Yes, and what can South Sudan learn from those countries you have mentioned in terms of overcoming the past?
Well, I sort of look at it as sort of three pillars. It's like you're trying to rebuild a house and you need different types of materials to make the house strong and good foundations as well, you know. And you don't build a house just in one day, and it takes a little bit of time and effort. So for me, the three different pillars that I sort of think about when I think about prevention and institutional reform is that the first pillar really is around truth and justice. So we talked a little bit about that and why and how truth and justice can prevent recurrence of violations. So that's the first one, and I can talk a little bit more about that. The second one really is around security sector, law reform, and resource governance. That's another pillar in a way. And then for me, the final pillar is really education. I think that is often overlooked when one talks about institutional reform. But I've come to learn some really interesting things from what's been done in Rwanda, for instance, where they really had a good look at their national curriculum and amended the national curriculum to include peace education, not just as a subject, but also as a cross-cutting competency for all subject areas. And I found that that's been really interesting because it's trying to bring skills and values to the next generation, which are all around active listening, critical thinking, questioning things, taking perspectives of others, being an active bystander, knowing when to step in. So that's also a really interesting area of reform or institution building that could be considered.
Okay, and I hope the Minister of Education will be taking that into account. Now, what about the issue of mechanisms or maybe monitoring mechanism that can help detect any future conflict before they escalate?
Yeah, I mean, that's a separate thing. Monitoring and is important, but prevention really is about laying the foundations. It's setting up new institutions and strengthening others is really about building trust in society and fairness. If people feel things are fair and that they've been heard and that there are good, strong institutions which will deal with their issues in a fair way, they won't need to resort to violence. You know, conflict is normal. You know, everyone has conflict in their life, but you don't need to resolve conflict with violence. You can go to court, you can have dialogue, you can have other ways of solving problems. So this is what the prevention mechanisms are, is strengthening the different avenues to solve conflict in a non-violent way. The monitoring part is important because it can, you know, you've got early warning systems and things that can tell you when things are are maybe escalating, but in and of themselves, they won't solve the problem. The foundations need to be set in a range of other ways. And actually, there are many initiatives already ongoing in South Sudan. I'm not an expert on them, but I'm aware that, you know, there are different initiatives that are already, you know, going in this direction. So this thing, these ideas are not new.
Yeah. Yes. Well, let's talk about the institutional reforms. And many analysts in South Sudan say that there is a very low public trust in many of our government and private institutions in this country, and this has made life a little bit hard for people who are looking for justice. How can these reforms help rebuild confidence in the government and the security sector reforms?
Yeah, you've really hit the nail on the head. Yeah, institutional reforms is really all about building trust and a sense of security. If people trust that their issues will be dealt with in a way that is fair, you know, you really sort of prevent that sense of people wanting to take matters into their own hands to solve the problem. There are many different types of ways that you build that trust. And that's why I was saying that it's like the fishing net. You need the whole net. You can't just have one part of it. You know, if you have one string that is broken, you won't get the results. So, for instance, the justice institutions and the security, the justice sector in itself is an area that needs to be strong. It needs to work for all different types of people, and that goes for all institutions. They need to be inclusive and accessible and fair, so that people use them and that they function well. Then they will have trust in those institutions, and that can be anything from the justice sector to governance of natural resources to distribution of land and resolution of land disputes, or all the mechanisms that deal with those tricky areas really need to be inclusive and seem to be fair. That's the key thing.
Okay. And you earlier on talked about the issue of accountability. How does accountability help in preventing any future conflict or atrocities, like what many people are saying was witnessed in 2013 and 2016?
Yes, I mean, truth and justice are not just about the past. I think a lot of people feel that it's about blame and pointing fingers, but it's not. It's also really key for prevention, because when specific harms are acknowledged and survivors have a space to name what happened, that really has a healing effect. And it does more than just have that healing effect. It also breaks a cycle of revenge. People can't forgive and move on if they don't feel that they've been heard or they feel that they've been lied to. Then there will still be that sense of upset, of grievance that can lead to violence. So, you know, we have this expression to stay the hand of vengeance. You know, we need these institutions of truth and justice to make people feel that there is honesty and openness, and that they don't need to resort to their own solutions, take the matters in their own hands, and maybe. Find their own way to violently solve a problem by, I don't know, retaking land that they believed was theirs, or you know, that kind of thing. If there are institutions there to do those things, that is what is important. So really it starts with truth, because that acknowledgement really paves the way for people to forgive, to move on, and then to rebuild. It's really hard to rebuild if people feel they have not been acknowledged or heard, or if that there are lies and that they don't feel, you know, they don't feel that the truth is out. I mean, truth is not about blame. It's also about building a foundation of trust so that a mother would know that her son won't pick up a gun because of a lie he was told, you know? If the truth is known, then things will be safer.
Okay. If you have just joined us right now, you're listening to Nationwide. My name is Sunny Martin, and my guest this evening is Mariana, who is the director of Right for Peace. And we are discussing about prevention mechanism and institutional reforms in South Sudan.
Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions, and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Good evening to you, and thank you so much for staying with us. And our lines will be open to you shortly, where you can call on 091-206-7879 or 091-206-7929. You can send us your comment or question to our SMS number 091-2177-141. Those are all our lines. You can get in touch with us here and ask your question to my guest Mariana as we discuss the prevention mechanism and institutional reforms. And this falls under the Revitalized Peace Agreement of 2018 in Chapter 5, where many people who lost their properties, who lost a loved one, will later on come. We have been discussing this program every Tuesday here on Nationwide program. Yes, Mariana, before we begin taking calls, one will be wondering, what role do you think communities, civil society, religious leaders can play in promoting, preventing, and also doing reconciliation across the country? Because some people say it would be very complex to follow the footpath of Rwanda in terms of reconciliation in South Sudan.
Yeah, that's a good question. What is the role of traditional leaders, local leaders, civil society? I think there's a really important role. In fact, the CTRH Act, the act that is establishing the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, that was passed by law and signed into law by the president in November 2024 in South Sudan, actually provides for a role for traditional leaders in also contributing to the truth-seeking process. It's not very clear in the law how, but it says that the truth and the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing should provide guidelines for how traditional leaders can also play their role. And I think that could end up being a really important part of the system if it's supported and there is sufficient training and guidance, because that would really bring an opportunity for grievances to be heard at a local level, which would be much more accessible for the vast majority of people, I think.
Okay. Yes, our lines are now open. You can call us on 091-206-7879 or 091-206-7929. Send us your comment or question to our SMS number 091-2177-141. And we have a couple of questions coming in here. And this one here is coming from Deng. Deng is writing from Juba here. He says, Mariana, in South Sudan, we have classifications of conflict. We have intercommunal conflict that happens in counties and sometimes in states. And also we have the national conflict that started in 2013 and 2016. Even up to today, we still have conflict happening. How do you differentiate between this intercommunal conflict and the conflict of 2013, 2016? what happens to those victims who might have lost their properties in this intercommunal conflict? Will they also be part of the CTRH? How do you categorize them? This is from Deng here in Juba.
Thank you, Deng from Juba. That's a really good question. So I think what I was saying earlier is that conflict is something that's normal. We have conflict in society all the time. The question is how to deal with conflict in a way that is nonviolent. So, you know, you can have other systems and mechanisms to resolve conflict that is not the gun and a violent response. Even in the household, you know, you can have conflict and also ways of dealing with it that are nonviolent. So this is the issue. So as regards the different types of conflict that you're talking about, the intercommunal conflict, etc., for all of those, when it comes to prevention, which is the topic today, there was a need for strong institutions and mechanisms to support non-violent resolution of all those conflicts, whether they're at the local level and they're intercommunal, or whether they're at a national level. So there needs to be ways or pathways that are clear, that are fair, that are trusted, that are inclusive at different levels, that are accessible to people. And that is part of when we talk about justice sector reform. That's part of what one's thinking about. It's not just, you know, the top levels of justice, but right down to the village level. Is it functioning? Does it, you know, are conflicts able to be resolved at those levels? Because if there are ways to resolve those conflicts at local levels, and I know that there are initiatives in different parts of the country that are some of them successful to deal with these different types of conflicts in a non-violent way. That is really the foundation, those investment in those different levels of institutions that are needed to allow conflicts to be resolved. But when it comes to the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, my understanding is that it is supposed to be only for violations that's up to the year of 2018. So I think the ongoing violence, I'm not sure if it's covered, but I need to check that. I need to look at the law quickly because I'm not 100% sure, but maybe you also know.
Okay.
Sunny.
Yes. And Taban in Juba here is also asking, he says, Mariana, my question is, what role do you think the international communities, the African Union, the United Nations, and other bodies can do to support this commission move forward?
What role can they do to help support the commission move forward? Well, I think, you know, there's always training and support, but I think it needs to come from the government institutions itself, because at the end of the day, this, you know, it's up to them also to move the process forward. So yeah, of course, there's a role in terms of, I mean, I've seen how it's worked in other countries, and there has been strong support. For instance, I was living in Sierra Leone for some time, and there was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission there, and the UN played a big role in supporting the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. In terms of, you know, all sorts of support was provided, and from security to premises initially, to expertise, lots of different kinds of support can be provided. But though that kind of support also needs to be requested and sought by the national entities. You know, they're there as a guest. The UN, is my understanding.
Okay. Yes, our lines are now open. You can call and be part of our discussion here, as I have on the line Mariana, and we are discussing about prevention mechanisms and institutional reforms in South Sudan. Yes, hello, Redimire. Hello. Yes, hello, Redimire. Hello.
Yes, Sande Martin.
Yes, your name?
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Ageo Mabok, Ageo from Wau.
Okay, Ageo from Wau. Western Barracks, I'll go
ahead. Yes, I have two questions to our guest online.
Mm-hmm.
Question number one is, how can the commission now convince the political leaders who are fighting for their own interests? You see, you might have seen the conflict of interest that is ongoing in this country. Someone wanted to be holding a certain position, top position in the government. When he is removed, he will immediately go to the bush and now begin to fight the government. So what must he do? You have to say kind of people. How will the commission advise such kind of individuals to stop conflict, you see, to stop fighting the government, or to stop also killing people? You know, there has been road ambushes that always happen here and there. You see, as a result, people also being killed as a result of now political, you see, fighting, political conflict of interest, and many other things that are always happening here and there in this country. What message do you also have, and how can you also convince such leaders so that they avoid all these, they stop unnecessary fighting, also killing, civilians that are also vulnerable, innocent civilians, and they accept peace for the sake of the poor citizens of this country? This is the first question.
Okay.
The second question is, also, you know, the powers of the commission now to either impose everlasting peace to our leaders in this country, if at all they don't listen to them, if at all they fail to listen to them. Do you also have now powers to make sure that peace is forcefully, you know, enforced on our leaders to accept the peace and now allow people to move freely without being killed? Or don't you have such powers now to do that?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Agil. And we have two questions coming via our SMS number here. And this is coming from Jackson. And Jackson says, thank you, Mireille, for always bringing this topic every Tuesday. And he would like to know from the expert, when will this commission begin to work? And the second question from Jackson is, could the institutional reform threaten powerful elites who benefit from weak governance structures? This is a part of the question of Jackson. Yes, Mariana, let's begin with the question coming via our SMS number here. That when will the work begin? And the second part of his question is talking about the powerful elites who are benefiting from a weak governance structure. Can this reform threaten their powers?
Yes, so that's a good question. The question about whether the commission will have the power to summon or compel people to provide a testimony or to appear before it is actually in the Act. It's Section 20 of the CTRH Act 2024, and it says that it shall be able to summon people whose testimony it deems relevant. And immunity shall not apply. So it can request information from specific public or private archives. It can request information from government or administrative agencies, from the courts. It can also request information from foreign authorities and from NGOs. And it can carry out inspections in private and public places, and it can also do searches and seizures of documents. So it has some powers, this CTRH. I know this session was supposed to be about prevention, but it's exciting that people are coming back to the CTRH and want to know more about when it will start and its powers. So about when it will start, I'm not based there in Juba, so I'm not aware of the latest, but the last I heard was that the commissioners have been selected. So there are commissioners that were selected through a process in South Sudan through a selection committee. And then there are also commissioners who are selected through the African Union. So those are those are from other African countries, not from South Sudan. So there were three African Union ones that come through that route and four that are selected from South Sudan. And my understanding was that they've all been selected now, the three African Union and also the four South Sudan ones. But whether they've been appointed, the final appointment by the government, I don't know whether that's happened or not. I think there is a need still for vetting, that's my understanding, and that the parliament, the transitional national assembly that you have there, has a role to do vetting of all the seven candidates or the seven commissioners who have been selected. I think that's where things are at, but maybe another caller may correct me because I am not there locally.
Okay. Yes, there was this question from Taban Jackson saying, can these reforms we are discussing this evening, can it threaten powerful elites who benefit from weak governance structures?
The idea of the CTRH really isn't to threaten people because it's not a court. It's really just seeking truth. It hasn't got an ability to punish anybody. It's just making recommendations about prevention and also clarifying and giving acknowledgement to what happened. So I don't think the role really is supposed to be like a confrontation. It's supposed to be an opportunity for people to come together and talk about the harms that they have suffered, and for others also to acknowledge that that these things happened, and that sometimes maybe there were failings. People maybe were not protected the way they should have been, but it's not supposed to be a confrontation or a threat. It's supposed to be an opportunity to build foundations for building peace, to clear the air.
Okay. And more questions coming in here. And this one here is coming from Michael in Juba. He says, from your own experience and from those countries you have worked in, like in Liberia, given the enormous challenges South Sudan is facing, what, in your opinion, are the biggest obstacles to implementing these institutional reforms in a post-conflict South Sudan that will help in preventing any future relapse of conflict in South Sudan? This is from Michael in Juba.
Wow, that's a big question. Also, someone needs to know really well South Sudan, which, I'm a Khawaja, so what do I know? But in just from what I've learned from other countries and how what the challenges are there, I mean, there are some really big challenges. I think land is always a really big challenge, and resources, and which includes access to land, I think is always a really big challenge to resolve after a long protracted conflict. But also the security sector reform is also very, very important to have and it's also difficult as well when an environment where there are a lot of weapons, there has been a proliferation of weapons, that can also be really difficult as well. But that one is really fundamental, the security sector reform, because you need a security sector that is protecting everybody equally. One system that protects everyone, and until that is, people feel safe. The system is there to make people feel safe, and at the moment, I feel like it's maybe more like the other way around. So yeah, that's a really big challenge.
Okay. If you have just joined us right now, or you are listening to Nationwide, my name is Sunny Martin, and this evening our topic is about prevention mechanism and institutional reforms in South Sudan. And my guest is Mariana, who is the Director of Rights for Peace. And that's what we are discussing. Our lines are still open, or you can also choose to send us your comment, question to our SMS number, 0912177141, or you can call us live on the radio this evening on 0912067879 or 0912067929. Those are all our lines. You can get in touch with us here and be part of our discussion right here. Good evening to you. Still now, our lines are open again. You can call us and be part of our discussion. And in just a few minutes' time, we shall be also heading towards the newsroom for the news at 6 p.m. in English. And from there, Nationwide program will continue in the second hour. We have two more questions here. And this one is asking that... should amnesty ever be granted for serious human rights violation in the interest of peace? Another question here is asking, how can judicial reform strengthen accountability and the rule of law in South Sudan? These are two questions coming from Lupai in Yei River County, Central Equatorial State. Yes, Mariana. The first question, these are two questions about the issue of how can reforms, judicial reforms, strengthen accountability and the rule of law in South Sudan.
So the issue of amnesty is a really controversial one because, you know, it's, you know, why would a petty thief be prosecuted and punished when, you know, someone who has committed much worse things be allowed to go free? So that's, you know, the principle of justice really is challenged when we talk about amnesties. So what normally the compromise with transitional justice is that amnesties are allowed for the lesser violations. So they're not allowed for the very highest level international crimes such as genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, torture, enforced disappearances. Those kinds of things are, it's prohibited under international law to use amnesties. But for smaller violations, the idea is that you can allow amnesties in exchange for truth-telling. So if somebody really has made an effort to really redeem themselves and acknowledge what they have done and, you know, maybe apologize as well, this can encourage healing. So in order to encourage people to come forward and say, I'm sorry, I did these things, it was bad, that in order for that to happen, the idea is that in exchange they will go free. They won't be prosecuted. They will have an amnesty, and this is how it's worked in a number of other countries. The only problem is that people then feel that maybe they haven't told the whole of the truth. They only say a little bit of the truth, and then they still get the benefit of the amnesty. So it is controversial, but it is important also that the truth-telling process functions, and it's not just victims talking, but also people who have things on their chest and who want to be forgiven. Sometimes, you know, people are in the wrong place at the wrong time, and maybe they want to seek forgiveness for what they might have done. So that is the purpose of the amnesty, and it's that is exactly the way it is in the CTRH Act of 2024. Amnesties are possible, so the commissioners can grant an amnesty, they can recommend an amnesty, but there are very strict rules as to what conditions. So they have to meet certain conditions to be able to be eligible for the amnesty. So they have to tell the full truth, and they have to, first they need to apply for the amnesty, and in respect of specific crimes that that they might have committed. And then they need to, you know, really show that they have told all the truth. And there are a number of other conditions as well. So it's not like automatic at all. It would be quite hard to get the amnesty. And really we need to show that those conditions have been met.
Okay. Yes, and because of the interest of time, what message do you have for South Sudanese leaders and citizens on the importance of this reform we have been discussing, and also prevention mechanisms, finally?
Well, I mean, I've been to South Sudan many times, and I've really been lucky to fly over the country many times. It's such a beautiful country. It's such a rich country. It's got such wonderful people. I really think that these mechanisms can be an opportunity for laying foundations for peace. I think truth-telling can create a sense of trust in institutions, and that again, that sense of trust can also make people feel heard and that they don't need to take matters into their own hands, and can prevent the sense of revenge and cycles of violence. So I think that, you know, there is some value in these institutions. They could function, especially if there is a way to find a good involvement for local traditional justice leaders to also have a role that is supported within that process. I think it could be a game changer in terms of people's sense of trust and healing in setting foundations for peace and building social cohesion. But it will take a big effort.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mariana, for your time this evening. We appreciate your time.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and that was Mariana Goetz, the Director of Peace, Right for Peace, and she was talking about prevention mechanism and institutional reforms in South Sudan. My name is Sani Martin. The news is coming next at the top of the hour in English. Join my colleague, Gabriel Shadar, for the news hour of Nationwide. Stay tuned.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Mirai.